Are you looking for a podcast where you can hear from real people regarding their real dental drama? If so, then you've come to the right place. Join hosts Bethany Petty and Dr. Rena Kuba as we dive into the solutions we've created and the mistakes we've made while managing dental drama. Let's get started.
So I started us off last week with a Swiftie song, a Taylor Swift song. I got another one for you.
Oh, you ready? I'm ready.
You need to calm down. You're being too loud.
We should just name all of our episodes going forward after Swiftie songs. I mean, why
what about
not?
Our audience that can't stand her? So, all right.
The problem, it's you.
Yeah. I will look at other genres and artists for future podcasts.
Why? Who needs anybody else but Taylor?
Yeah, but in that same vein, you know, we talked about accountability, and yes. I think accountability falls under the umbrella of culture. And I know you and I have talked a lot recently about culture in the office. And I think from what you indicated to me recently was that seems to be a recurring theme with a lot of your clients, is this broken culture.
Oh, yeah.
And I said, well, what do you mean? Like, what kinds of things? And, you know, you said a few things and I was like, oh, you're basically talking about my office. Okay, yeah. I'm right there with you, I guess. Yes, let's call it a culture problem. Because we try so damn hard to not have a culture problem. And I think it is multifactorial for sure. So if you don't mind,
yeah,
because I wanted some juicy conversation today. I want to get out of my office because everything you said, I was like, you're literally talking about it. Talk to me about somebody else's office.
I will be honest. It has come up with multiple clients over the last few weeks even. So I'll give a couple examples here that we can kind of talk through. Probably my most recent one popped up literally this last week, and then again in an additional conversation. So this client I travel to usually about once every 3 months. And so we've had throughout the years, we've had culture issues come up with his team. This particular time it was back in full force. So what kind of culture problems? A lot of what I would call infighting, blaming, you know, like, hey, this person's not doing her job, therefore this is causing a problem. They just don't know what they're doing, so they're messing stuff up all the time. We don't like to help that department because that department doesn't help us. Just a lot of negativity, a lot of mumbling under the breath about people, a lot of complaining, negativity directly at one another. And so in this particular team, it's a really large team, and we've been through a lot of transition over the years. Lost a lot of people, gained a lot of people, a lot of solid people still in place as well, but just a lot of transition. And I've found that culture can really get off when we have a lot of team members transitioning on and off, which I feel like is similar to what's happened in your practice. But bottom line is we ended up spending an entire day, almost an entire day, talking about culture and what's wrong with our current culture, what needs to change with the culture. And,
which I would love to even hear how you did that.
Yeah.
Like how did you start that? What conversations did you have? Were people engaged in it? Did you have people like going, we don't have a culture problem, or I'm not fixing this? Or as I said last week, I'm not the problem. It's you, right? Like, how do you get through a day like that? So
yeah.
This may not be the forum that you want to talk about that per se, but I do want to know those answers.
They were very engaged.
So they all agreed that
they all agreed problem. That there was a culture problem. Some were more passionate about the culture side of things, but it seemed like all were very engaged in the process. So I will say, yes, we can come back and talk about how we went through that, but that came up. I'll give you another example of a culture problem. A client that I work with, having some dialogue with his team members, and there's this culture of what I would call mistrust, where team members perceive that he doesn't trust them to do their job. And he perceives that they're not on board with where he's trying to take the practice. And so it just creates this constant, like everything that's communicated is perceived through these lens of he doesn't trust me or I don't trust him.
Is it a new team? Why? How? What happened?
There are new team members on the team, but this is where it may branch off here for a minute, but I think it's worth mentioning here. I feel like I see more culture problems now than, when I say now, over these last couple years, than I have seen in a very long time. Almost, I won't say almost every practice. The majority of practices that I step into have a culture problem, is what I would say. And I do think some of it comes from a younger workforce. There are assumptions that are made. There are mindsets that they have that I just feel like are a challenge for culture. So especially when we have a team with a blended age group, I feel like culture becomes a problem because in all honesty, fundamentally, they have different values.
So I think that's always my go-to. And I hate that I've become that person, but just about every other day, what am I saying? Every other hour, I'm like, well, that's just an age difference. That's just, that's your youth coming through. Well, and I hate to be this, I feel like I'm this 80-year-old, like, mean old lady with a stick. Thing working with the 20-year-old something or the fit, but it is just different. It's very different. And I think part of it, I was reading an article somewhere that was like, you know, I mean, like really for us, like yours and my generation, if you will, that's the word I keep using, generation. I'm like, God damn, I've turned into one of those people. But even down to like our cell phones and things like that, mm-hmm. and the speed at which we require information or our expectations of things and of people, has changed. And I think that it's, in my opinion, it is more contrasting now than it ever has been before.
Yeah.
And so it is. It's like the generations are kind of going, I don't understand you.
Right.
And what do you do? How do you move forward from that? Like you said, the values are just totally different.
They really are. And I still think it's possible to have a successful culture, even with some of that age difference that occurs on the team. But I think it requires a lot more communication. So, for example, with this large team that I was talking about, I mean, how do we bring that? How do we bring everybody together on the same page? It requires, what are our expectations of one another? We can't, there are, even if there's a 60-year-old and a 20-year-old, there should be things that those two people can agree. I expect this of you as my coworker, and I expect this of you. And okay, great. That's part of what we need to focus on so that when you aren't holding up your end of the deal, one of the words that we talked about in this team was like positivity, you know, just the culture had become very negative. And so one of the things they wanted that they all talked about together was positivity. Well, if we've all agreed upon this, this is one of the values that we have on our team. Well, then when somebody's not holding up their end of the deal and they're talking real negatively or saying a lot of crappy stuff about somebody else, as a coworker, I should be able to say, hey, friend, like we've talked about this. That's, ooh, you're going into negativity land, and we got to bring it back to positive land. Now, a lot of people don't know how to confront. That goes back to how to give feedback. We need to do it in the right way, but we should have something centralized that we can all agree upon, no matter the age gap.
And then if you have an outlier that's like, I do not agree with that. Like if one person said, well, I expect this of you, and that person's like, I'm never going to give you that.
Yeah.
Then we've got to figure out who needs to get off the island. Is
correct.
That, okay.
I do feel like when we can have a really solid idea of the culture we expect, there's going to be people that we're looking to potentially even hire where that culture is first and foremost. Like, for example, with your practice, I feel like you've always had this push for excellence. Like, here's standard of everything. We're going to go like 10 paces above that. on all things. We are going to be a highly detailed office, a highly, trained office, all of this. And so this is one of the things I communicate with people when I'm helping you interview them. I want to make sure they know that I don't care if they've been in the field for 20 years. They're about to step into a challenging environment, because the level at which you've probably been functioning for 20 years is not going to be an acceptable level in this office. You're going to have to stretch yourself. You're going to have to learn new things. You're going to have to be willing to learn from other people on the team and consider new ways of doing things. And by the way, Dr. Kuba invests in a lot of training. That training is meant to be used, not just heard, but actually used and implemented. So I have this conversation because what I don't want is to attract somebody that just wants to do things that they always have. So I'm front and center with that as a culture piece. And one of the conversations we just had a couple weeks ago with one of your newer employees, she's been in the field for a long time, and she even said, I am even questioning, do I even know what I'm doing? And I told her, I brought it back up to her. I'm like, remember, I told you that would happen. I told you this is a challenging environment and that you gotta have some grit to really kind of get through the process. That's a culture piece for you. I don't want to attract people to the team that are fine with status quo. They're really fine with their level of knowledge. They don't have a desire to learn anymore. No, instead, we want to attract people that are like pushers, go-getters, all of that. So to me, yes, there's going to be certain people that don't fit with the culture, and either they need to be booted off the team or they need to get in alignment with the culture. So other example that I'll give you. So I gave you the one just kind of negativity, and then the lack of trust, which we can talk about that a little bit more too. The other one is that just came up in the last couple weeks is this culture of just, I don't know how to say it other than siloed off people. It's like they're not working as a team. They all have, like, my job is the most important on the team, and therefore I'm going to invest all of my attention and energy into my job, and I don't necessarily care what you're doing. I don't need to know what you're doing. Like, I'm fine. But what it's created is a very chaotic environment that the doctor is like so stressed about all the time, because there's not this collaboration. There's a lot of balls that are dropped because it doesn't perfectly fit into one of the categories. And so it's just a very chaotic environment. A lot of blaming. Oh no, that's that person's job. Well, there's no clear definition of who's doing what. And even if there were, it would silo off the individuals even more. So like, we're focusing in this particular practice on a culture of cross-training. Like, you're going to always be learning somebody else's job to try to counteract that me first type mentality. So that would be one of the other issues that have popped
up. So how do you think these happen? Like, I mean, I guess I go back and say like we've said before 1,000 times, like, it all starts at the top. So then I'm going, okay, if I've got a cultural problem, it's my fault. It's the problem. I'm me. I'm it. Whatever that saying is that I was so proud of there a minute ago. Taylor, where are you? So I guess it's me. So if I've got a negativity problem in my office, then I've got to figure out where I've been negative. So is this one that this doctor, how did the siloing off happen?
Well, let me say something on that, because I agree with you. The leader has a lot of responsibility in setting the tone, depending upon their leadership style. So in the first example that I gave, just a lot of negativity, this had client of mine, we actually talked about his leadership style afterwards. He had just listened to the recent episode on that. And so he's like, well, what am I? And so I immediately told him, like, you're a laissez-faire leader. And he was like, really? Okay. And so his, if you'll remember about the laissez-faire leader, he's got a high trust in his team. And he does. He puts a lot of weight on them just doing their job and doing it well. And he is more hands-off. And it really works well. I mean, he's got the right team for it, in my opinion. But in situations like this where, oh no, now we've spiraled out And the leader seems to be a little bit disconnected from that. He is intentionally disconnected from that because he's like, I've got great team members that should be able to figure this out. So y'all figure it out. But at some point, it may require an intervention, which is why we spent the day focusing on it. Because I'm like, okay, we need to intervene in this, and we've got to try to reroute the ship. So he's not negative at all. He is not a negative person. He's the type, like, put your head down, get the job done, do an excellent job, go home. Like, that's his mindset. He's not complaining to me about individuals. He's not complaining to others. Like, he just doesn't think like that at all. But this culture has started despite him because he's a little bit laid back and removed from the situation. So I wouldn't say the culture isn't always a representation of what the leader.
Phew. So it's not me.
It's not you.
I'm not the problem.
You're okay.
Ooh, okay. Feel better now.
But like, even when we talked, I can't remember, a couple months ago, I think we may have mentioned it on here, that your culture was starting. We were like, oh no, all of a sudden we've got this culture issue underneath us, which was a culture of negativity, pointing out people's mistakes, just snippiness, condescending tones, things like that. When we talked about it, you're like, okay, well, what do I need to do? And one of the very simple things we said was just start interjecting compliments, positivity, looking for the successes rather than looking for mistakes. And you did. I feel like you stepped that up quite a bit.
I feel like I was more laissez-faire at that period. I feel like I was so overwhelmed with all the changes and all of that. And I was just like, I'm just sticking my head in the sand and this will work out whichever way it will. And then it started going down that path and I was like, oh, crap. Like,
yeah,
maybe I should have paid more attention.
Yeah. And even just that, because even just you starting to kind of infuse more positive comments or even just pushing back against the negativity, like previously you might have just listened to that negativity and been like, I get that. That's frustrating. Instead, you were like, but if you look at it from this angle. But I see it this way. And so even just you gently starting to push back in those individual conversations started to kind of turn that culture back around. So was it your fault that it happened? No. Were you being negative? No. Were you nitpicking? No. But it still happened under your nose, so to speak. So I feel like that's where I wouldn't blame the leader in all of these cases.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Excellent.
But I would say the leader is critical in solving it. You're not completely off the hook.
Okay. So I get to save the day. Be the hero.
You get to be the hero.
Okay. All right.
Can we handle that?
No. I don't want to be the hero. I just want to drill, Bill, and Phil.
You're like, leave me alone.
You're the hero. This. Can you take the cape? You take it.
So can I give some tips on culture and see if we can talk
through
that?
Please, please.
So I'll give the example of this one that I keep referring back to, because I feel like it's easier to think about the solution to this in an all-day training session. I love my people that I travel for because I feel like I can cram so much into one day. Now, it's not as easily absorbed because it's one intense day of training. But with this particular client, what we did was we started the day focusing on three what I would call celebrated cultures. One of them not quite as publicly, but we focused on people that had been kind of awarded or recognized for their culture, their work culture. So I picked Adobe, which is celebrated quite a bit. And you're like, that's so random. It is. Netflix, which is a very different type of culture from Adobe, but very celebrated. And then Chick-fil-A, which isn't as publicly recognized for its culture, but they put a lot of emphasis into their work culture. And I feel like, for the most part, deliver consistently a certain type of experience, which lends itself to that comes from a very strong work culture. So I had I broke the team into sub-teams, and they had to study this culture, and I had 5 questions that they had to answer about it. You know, what makes them so successful? How do they saturate their employees in this culture? You know, how do they hold people accountable to this culture? I can't remember the other two, but and what are the main qualities of this culture? You know, if you were to pick keywords, what would they be? So they all individually had to look at these cultures, answer those five questions, and then they presented to the big team their culture that they studied and what made it so successful. So I think that was a really good start because it was neutral. It was like, okay, we're not talking about our culture right now. We're just talking about culture in general. And let's look outside of even the dental field. And so I think that removed it enough that we could start to engage in this conversation without throwing up people's warning flags.
It is brilliant.
Yeah. And I think it's a good step for culture problems, even if you don't have an all-day training on it. If you're planning to spend the next three staff meetings talking about work culture, then maybe step one is, hey, let's dive into some cool work cultures. And it doesn't have to be those three. There's lots of celebrated ones. It's all a matter of, can your team find the information pretty easily? If they're having to do a lot of reading on articles and researching all that, then it can be a little bit, they can get lost on the project. So those three have very clear, like, pages in their on their website about their work culture. So we talked through that. And then we moved into kind of problem solution. So again, dividing up into our teams, what are the current problems that we have with our culture? What's broken about it? And then what would we do if we created our top five words or our values, things that from a team member standpoint, this is not like patient care focused. Work culture is team member focused. What do I expect of myself? What do I expect of my boss? What do I expect of my team members? So it's not like we deliver premium quality dentistry. No, that's your mantra for your patients. And yes, should still guide us as a team. But when there's a culture issue, we've got to figure out what are our expectations of one another. So we did, you know, problems. And then if we were to create a work culture mantra or value system, what would be the opposing value to that problem? And then they had a poster board where they answered those same five questions that we did about the companies. They had to answer about their mantra that they were putting together. So what are the core what are the core tenets of it? How do we saturate our employees in that? How do we hold each other accountable to that, et cetera, et cetera? And so then they put together like a poster that answered all five of those questions and then presented their culture. After that, we went into like a group conversation about, we looked at the three posters all together. What do we all agree upon? They all rated. So I picked like, you know, the top 10 words that I saw, and then we, you know, rated those. Rated them, meaning people voted for certain words. And we ended up with six that we all agreed upon. And then it was basically like, okay, how do we implement this? Like, yes, in theory, it sounds really good, but what's like the practical proof that we're living up to positivity, for example? Like, okay, that's one of the things that we're aiming for, but what's the litmus test that shows whether we're on point with that or whether we're off? Which that's where it gets real tangible and practical. So I tried to round it out at the end with like, what are our takeaways? What are we doing with this? How do we remember that this is our mantra? Are we putting it on t-shirts? Are we tattooing it on our arm? Like, how do we even remember?
And what's the consequence, I guess, is my question.
Yes. Yes. And then how do we ultimately hold ourselves accountable to that? Which, knowing this practice owner is a laissez-faire leader, it is very unfair to me to go, okay, you know, Dr. Jones, now that we've got this mantra, you're the one responsible to hold everybody accountable. And if somebody's not being positive, then blah, blah. That is, to me, that's a failure waiting to happen, because that is not the way he's led this team. And it's worked beautifully all these years. Why would we all of a sudden expect a different leader out of that situation? So we focused more on team member accountability and, you know, giving each other feedback appropriately when you're off the mark. And there were some tangible things like incorporating some more team building events to try to focus on, you know, connections with one another, you know, visible, you know, putting it up in the break room, talking about having somebody focus on it weekly, like having a weekly, every 6 weeks, we're making our round back through. So there were some very practical things, but it was more focused on the team than it was the doctor in this particular case. So now that I've kind of broke that all down, what are your thoughts?
I really like that. We went, it was almost a year ago-ish, our Texas Academy of Pediatric Dentistry spring whatever CE day was, I think it was Ritz Carlton training.
Yeah.
And apparently, like, we were just told this by Scheduling Institute, oh, you know, we're spending 6 hours on this today. Ritz Carlton, they get 200 something hours a year in customer service training and all of that. So they had a Ritz Carlton person come out and talk to us about how they do all of these things. And it's a lot of what you just said, actually. I think my disappointment, I guess would be the word, is we never got to the last part of, like, okay, we've talked about it, we've put all of these things on paper, but now what? Yeah. And I think that's where I always get frustrated with things. And as much as I love a lot of what Scheduling Institute offers, at the end of the day, then I'm left on my own to go, okay, now what am I doing with this? And I don't want this day to be a waste of a day. And so that's why I like what you just said about, like, really connecting it to what can we do.
Yeah.
And if we've all determined that we want a more positive environment, I think just even the fact that that's in the break room to go and say, hey, you promised, or you're the one who came up with this, what are you doing to make that happen?
Yes.
I don't know.
Because to me, that's how culture is built. It cannot rest on the leader. Any one of these big businesses that you look at that's celebrated for their culture, so much of it has an individual accountability component. To the point that if you aren't living up to the culture, you're at risk of losing your job with this company because you're not adhering to this culture that's so valuable to us. And I think that's where a lot of team members get off, because they want to put all of that culture on the leader, and that's not fair and it's not practical. It's not going to set the tone. Can the leader be behind it and believe in it and advocate for it? Absolutely. Can the leader incorporate it into performance reviews? For example, if we've got annual performance reviews, should those characteristics that we're aiming for come up? Absolutely. Can we talk about whether the employee is living up to those 6 expectations? Absolutely, we should. So there can be that kind of emphasis from the leader. And even support, if you've got a, you know, culture police or somebody that's your, you know, culture fan, and we've put a lot of the emphasis of the execution on that person, can you as a leader or a practice owner support that person and encourage that person and have meetings with that person? Absolutely. But at the end of the day, individuals on the team need to be able to hold themselves accountable to the decided upon culture. If the culture's fuzzy, or we're not unclear of what the culture is, or we've been through a lot of transition and culture used to be this, and all of a sudden we've got 3 new people on the team and I don't know how we ended up here. Okay, well then that's where the leader may have to step in more and help provide the focus or the importance upon this subject. But the long-term execution of it really needs to be individuals amongst the team holding each other accountable for that.
So what would you say to a young owner? And I don't mean like a young as an actual age, but like I'm a brand new owner. So whether you're, you know, 25, 35, or 55, finally starting your own practice, like that's what I mean by a young owner. You're new to owning, I guess. And you've got your staff of 2 or 3 that you struggled to get. What would you say, like, it's important to build your culture now so you can attract people, but you only got 2 people applying to the job anyway? Like,
So I would say most times people can acclimate to your culture as long as it's clearly communicated. So I think that's really the first step. And this is not a new topic, I would say. I mean, work culture has been talked about for a very, very long time. It has become critically important in my mind. I see it so many times swaying the success of the practice, which is where I'm like, oh my gosh, if this is the problem and it's impacting the numbers and what my client is able to take home or what my client is able to do from a business standpoint, like it has to be fixed. And so I don't know if that is from generational differences that have occurred that now we've got to put more focus on work culture, but it is fresher, I think, to dentistry. We haven't always had to focus on it. I think now we have to critically focus on it from a retention standpoint, from a happiness standpoint for the practice owner.
From a burnout standpoint.
Yes. Like, we've got to focus on it, which means if you're a new practice owner, you yourself have to decide, what is the culture that I'm expecting? And I need to be able to not only think about that, but put that into clear words or expectations.
I think that is a really good point because I think a lot of us, it's probably a multifold problem actually, but one, it's like, I've got to be careful of what I ask for and what I expect because then I'm going to lose the one employee that did apply. And so we play that game for a while. And so that's one that, you know, we need to be mindful of. But still, I think if you've never actually sat and thought about what's important to you and what your own expectations are, like, it, I guess I would say thinking about it from like your fairy godmother came down and said, here you go, I'm going to find you the perfect person. Yeah. What is it that you want? Because yep. I think a lot of us are like, well, it's one thing what I want, but it's like, what can I actually have? Okay, put that aside. Think about what would you actually want? And then try to find as close to that as you can.
Yep.
So being practical. But I think the other part of the problem too is, I think a lot of us, and I'm very guilty of this, like in my mind, like, isn't that common sense that I would want somebody who doesn't steal? Isn't it common sense that I would want somebody who wants to see these patients so we can make some money? Isn't it common sense that I would want to show up on time and have done my chart reviews for a couple of days in advance so that I'm not running like a turkey a couple of days. So it's like all those little things that I think it's like I've had to learn over the years that just because that's what my preferences are, that's just what's in my head or what I do, doesn't mean that that's for everybody. But I've spent a lot of time assuming that it was. Or I'm like, you can't lead by example. Like, you're seeing that I am the one who is, you know, putting a cassette together this way. And yet, assistant, you continually do it that way.
Right.
Why? But if I've not said it to you and said, well, this is why I do it in this order and this is why it's important because I don't want you to get poked by something, but I also don't want, like, the handpiece to get thrown away, so this is why I do it this way, rather than me sitting there going, duh, just yeah. watch what I'm doing, that's a back on me because now I'm making assumptions that you're going to figure it out and there may be reasons you don't figure it out. Like, even one silly little example the other day, we have a new hire. I was talking with her, you know, doing her 1 month evaluation. And one of the things that I kind of cautioned her against, three times now in the first 4 or 5 weeks, she has asked to go ahead and leave at the end of the day at like 1 o'clock or 2 o'clock. And the third time she did that, I was like, are you kidding me? Like, you're in honeymoon phase. She's not a new assistant. Like, she's a little bit older, more seasoned in her assistant career. I'm like, you of all people know, like, this new generation who has no work ethic, who doesn't know the difference, and roll in whenever they want to. They need to be happy with their work-life balance, right? Like, so it wasn't one of those. I was like, she knows better. She's one of my generation. Like, what is she doing? So I was just like, you know, what are you doing? Like, what? And you know, we kind of talked about it. And she's like, well, you know, this day I had a migraine. This day I said, I know, but you need to understand, like, without me knowing, because I wasn't the one to approve or know about this. I'm just hearing about it on the back end. And so me knowing nothing, very, you know, looking at it just an overview going, if I was your teammates, I would be like, oh, you don't want to help clean up. You don't want to be the one to stay late. You don't want to be. And mm-hmm. So to me, I'm like, are you lazy? And is your team going to vote you off the island at 90 days because they don't trust that you're there to help them? And she was like, oh. And she's like, well, the one day that I asked, it was a slow day, so I knew somebody would have to go home, so I said, I'll leave. I said, well, that's what I'm talking about. Like, in your mind, you were going to not be the burden. I go, but can you see how somebody else would easily say, like, to me, you should have been the one to say, does anybody else want to go home?
Right.
Because you're the new kid on the block. You're the oldest one of the bunch. Like, you could be the mom of some of the other assistants, but as far as the longevity goes, she's been here for 6 years. You've been here for 6 weeks. You should be asking her, mm-hmm. do you want to go home? And that had never occurred to her. She thought she was doing what was best for everybody. And I was like, but that's you assuming you knew what was best. Maybe these two who have kids would love to go home early and pick up their kids today.
Yeah.
So I need you to not assume that. I need you to ask. So anyway, that was another one that it was like, if you don't, whatever's norm in your own mind may not be norm to somebody else's mind. And I'm running into that every day.
Yeah.
I get frustrated with people all the time where I'm like, damn it, that was me who I should have clarified.
The communication of it, I think, is critical. We can't assume. We probably should have never assumed, but especially now with a different workforce, it's almost like we need to look back and know, no, the communication was there. Like, that person failed to meet expectations, but the expectations were very crystal clear. And if we can't look back and say that, then it's, to me, borderline unfair to hold somebody to an expectation that we didn't even verbalize.
Which is why I would say for the newer owners or people, you know, just now building your teams and things like that, I don't think I ever did that, which is why I stumbled ass backwards and fumbled around for so many years. And luckily I had good mentors and met you and all of that to kind of go, okay, but what is my expectation? Mm-hmm. And going from there. And I think, you know, we all have expectations in our head, but have you written it down and have you made it part of your onboarding process?
From the get-go. That is ideal. And if it's an existing team that hasn't really put it down on paper and made it clear, it's okay to have a fresh starting point, even if that hasn't been part of the culture all this time, but it needs to be clear. It can't just be talk of generally what we expect. It's got to lead to some kind of thing that you can point to when somebody's not upholding that expectation and go, see, it says right here, whether that's in the manual, whether that's in the break room, whether that's on a t-shirt or tattooed, I don't care, but something that is ultimately very visual that you can refer back to and hold people accountable.
But you've got to come up with yourself. Like, you've got to think about those things. And I think, especially for somebody who's newer to owning a practice, whether you just bought it or whatever, I mean, there are all sorts of challenges all over the way, but I think initially your goal is to go, I've got to get patients in the door. I've got to do the marketing. I've got to do all of this. And one of the things that quickly goes away, because it does require time and thinking and processing about what it is that is important to you. Mm-hmm. But I feel like that has really helped me a lot of times in those murky situations where I'm like, what do I do with this? Or even back to, you know, again, a few times a year, I've got to stop and I'm like getting really frustrated at something. And I'm like, what was your point of starting this practice to begin with?
Yeah.
What was your point? And going back to that why, I'm like, okay, well, then your answer becomes clear. Mm-hmm. And here, like, if you've got your expectations kind of and your culture mapped out, you know, then when you do get in those sticky situations where you're like, well, do I fire her? Do I not? Well, yeah, she's stolen from me like 3 different times. She comes late, but at least she's an assistant. No.
Yeah.
No. Get rid of her. There is a better fit. There has to be. Like, you've got to be true to your culture.
Yeah. I would agree with that 100%. It's a matter of coming up with what that is, what the deal breakers are, and then holding yourself accountable to that and your team.
Thanks for joining the conversation today. We hope that you are comforted in knowing that you are not alone, but we also hope that you're walking away with some really great tips and tricks to try in your practice. We value your feedback, so please take a few moments to rate and review the podcast. Finally, we want to make sure that we're covering the topics that matter to you. So track us down on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, and let us know what topics you want us to cover. As always, please know that we are rooting for you today as you manage your dental drama.